gridlock, shutdown, stalemate. I think it's actually three words.
The three words. So talk a little bit about this. Overall, you saw what the president proposed, and it's there's some tough stuff in there, isn't there?
Well, it depends who you talk to. I mean, this is the irony. You've got a Democratic president proposes $1.1 trillion in deficit reductions, and the Republicans kind of shrug their shoulders and go, "Huh, who cares?
Right.
You know, we wanted more." And I think that tells you a great deal about what this budget is about today. If the White House was assuming, I think correctly, that the Republicans were going to criticize whatever they did, they didn't want to start the negotiations on this year's budget by giving away the store, that is, by going too far, too fast, and not getting anything in return. So think of the positioning here. I mean, we've just talked about $1.1 trillion in deficit reductions. The president's going to get some props for that. They'll be talking about his deficit reduction budget. And so he gets in that game without having to go too far. And he now says it's to the Republicans, all right, show me what more you want to do. What he's proposing is going to be painful. What they're proposing is going to be political dynamite.
And so we're, I mean, there's a lot of cuts in there, a lot of proposed cuts, and it seems like the folks on Capitol Hill, Republicans on Capitol Hill in the House, saying this isn't, well, we haven't even started.
Well, and first of all, they're right, but then, you know, the president always goes first. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, but we'll see. One of the things we've discovered over the years is while all the polls show that the deficit is very unpopular and raising the federal debt ceiling is very unpopular, you know what's equally unpopular or worse is cutting federal spending.
Yeah.
The only area of federal spending that ever gets a majority of support is foreign aid.
And, you know, and so this leaves, and of course the Obama administration proposal doesn't really touch where the big money is, and that's in the stuff that we don't usually talk about.
Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, agricultural price supports, any of the entitlement programs, any of the benefit programs. No, not touched at all, and largely for political reasons. I think Republicans were disappointed the president didn't go after Medicare because they wanted to tag him with the making those changes. Don't forget, during the campaign, the so-called Pledge to America that House Republicans put out said they wouldn't touch Medicare, so they were hoping the president would go first. Now either they don't go and they match his unwillingness to do it on their own, or they propose cuts and have to take it on the chin, as Republicans have in the past for dealing with those programs.
One of the things, it's just the world has changed so dramatically in just like 6 months, this age of austerity just really locking in, and now there seems to be this battle over who can cut more. Feds pay cut for at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now there's some people talking about 5 years. I think feds are a little bit reeling, like, okay, how do we do our job in this environment? What should they be doing?
Well, I mean, first of all, it shouldn't be surprising to anybody. Unfortunately, federal workers, who are some of the hardest working people I've ever seen in my life with the least amount of thanks, for what they do, they always had a bullseye targeted on them. As soon as spending turned around, as soon as spending started to be an issue, as soon as the deficit started to be an issue, the easiest pickings relative to Medicare and Medicaid was going to be, you know, other federal programs, appropriated dollars. And so this shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody. It's been coming for a while. The problem here is that what federal workers want to do, which is be as effective as they can and make their work as efficient as they can, is not necessarily what Congress wants. There's a whole wing of the Republican Party these days that would be happy if the domestic side of the federal government went away. So, number one, I think if federal workers are looking for some guidance, don't assume that this is going to change anytime soon. That's unfortunate. It's unnecessary. Picking villains out that don't deserve to be selected, those types of things. But it's just a political fact of life. That's number one. Number two, assume that you're going to be asked to do more with less, and this is going to take two different tracks. Number one, there will clearly be less money for administrative expenses at the federal level for almost every department and agency, including defense, by the way. That means probably a reduction in force of some size in the years going ahead. Number two, in the past, that might have meant an additional use of contractors. And if you remember the Bowles-Simpson Commission, the Deficit Reduction Commission, they said that the government should also reduce its use of contractors. It was kind of a curse on both their houses. So number one, fewer workers in-house. Number two, less ability to contract out. But, and this is the big one that I complain about, if you're going to do that, if you're going to reduce the number of workers, if you're going to prevent the government from contracting out to get the work done, then there should also be some decisions about what the government should no longer be doing. That's what the agency should be pushing for. That is some clarification of what's a lower priority, what can be stopped, so that at least the things that, that an agency is doing, it can do well.
And that's been a sort of my frustration throughout this process. We're reducing the number of feds just through attrition rather than saying, hold on, these are the programs that we need. These are the skills we need. It feels a little bit like we're not doing this in a strategic way. We're just hacking.
Did you say it feels a little bit like
okay, this is the least strategic.
Yeah. This is not the way to run a railroad, let alone a government. Let me make that about as clear as you possibly can get. This is the worst way to do this, by continuing resolution, where you don't make decisions before the fiscal year and then somehow expect a federal agency or department to implement them quickly afterwards and then get angry when they don't. By not making priorities or not deciding what the government shouldn't do. You're not giving the guidance that's necessary for a federal manager to do his or her job. It is the worst possible way to manage.
And also big impacts for contractors here, too. You mentioned that previously we'd seen a lot of the shifts in the Clinton cuts. A lot of the stuff shifted to the private sector. That's not really, most people don't foresee that happening either.
No, in fact, this is one of maybe the most interesting things to watch in the coming weeks. There's unfortunately not a lot of sympathy for federal employees. There's also not a lot of understanding that they don't all live inside the Beltway, that they're in Dubuque as much as they are in Northern Virginia, for example. But put that aside. It's not just federal employees, that is, people who get their checks directly from the federal government, who are going to be affected by this. These cutbacks, continuing resolutions, government shutdowns, will have just as much impact on the private sector, government contractors, those that do business with the government, both who sell, hardware and professional services, as it does to the federal employees themselves. We saw this in the last shutdown. Now, Chris, I know you were around.
Yeah.
95 and 96. It only took 3 or 4 days before contractors started to realize, there's no one in the agency I do business with to process my invoices or to review my proposal or to accept things at the loading dock. And within 3 or 4 days, government contractors started to lay off people. Try to imagine the impact on this area, let alone any area in the country where there's a substantial concentration of government employees and contractors, if there's a shutdown or if there's the substantial cutback that the Republicans are talking about for the rest of this year. There will be, you'll be increasing unemployment substantially. It'll affect everything from housing prices to small businesses to everything else.
So walk us through what you're watching for, because I think sometimes people forget that what happened today is just a proposal. What happens today never ends up being the numbers. There's a lot of stuff that happens between now and if or when a budget ever finally gets passed.
Yeah. I'm glad you just put it the way you did, if or when, because I'm not sure we're going to get a budget this year, much the same way we didn't get one last year. There's been a fundamental change in Washington politics over the last couple of years, and that is that the word compromise has become a four-letter word.
Yeah.
When I got to Washington, which is now 3 decades ago, compromise is what you came here to do. I mean, you'd like to get your own way, but there are 435 members of the House, 100 members of the state, of the Senate, 50 states. Everyone's got different interests, and you had to compromise to get anything done. I have vivid memories of Democrats and Republicans working together. This is now decades ago.
Yeah. Well, now, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan working together on Social Security.
Well, not just Social Security, but on the budget. Actually, I'll get back to the question you just asked in a moment, but you raise a fascinating point. Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan agree on a deficit reduction plan. It was 2/3 spending and 1/3 tax increases. The deficit reduction proposal included in the Obama budget is, guess what, 2/3 spending, 1/3 tax increases. Hmm. And yet Republicans who venerate Ronald Reagan, who hold him up as a deity almost, are saying it's not right. It's not enough. We can't agree to it. So, in other words, the Ronald Reagan from the 1980s might not be comfortable in the Republican Party, or they might not be comfortable with him. Hmm. But let's go back to, compromise is now a dirty word. Compromise has now been defined by the Tea Party folks as collaborating with the enemy.
Yeah.
So whereas Newt Gingrich, Speaker, could deal with Bill Clinton in 95 and 96 and come to a compromise that would reopen the government, it's not clear to me that the House leadership has that same kind of luxury this time. They may very well have to shut down the government or allow it to be shut down once at least once to show the Tea Party people they were willing to do it.
And there's been a lot of discussion, and we only have about a minute left, but there a lot of discussion about government shutdown, folks saying, you know, Republicans wouldn't do that because the Republican Party got crunched when that happened 15 years ago. You don't necessarily think that's the case.
No, I think it's exactly not the case. And in fact, some of the Republican leaders have said the only thing they did wrong 15 years ago is they capitulated to Clinton too early. It's changed. It's very changed. I just keep repeating this mantra: gridlock, stalemate, shutdown.
Stan Kalander is a Colander. Sorry about that. Is the managing director at Corvus Communications. He's worked on budget policy, a private sector, a Capitol Hill. He's literally written the book, and he has a wonderful blog, Capital Gains and Games. He's a contributor to that. We have that linked up, and all of, in fact, Federal News Radio posted an agency by agency breakdown of the 2012 budget request.